You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with my co-host, Todd Adkins. Mm-hmm. And we are joined by Jenny Catron today. Jenny, welcome.
Hello.
So Jenny will be a semi-regular guest on the podcast.
As long as you'll have me.
That's right, which we don't see any reason not to. People seem to like you. We like you. You say smarter things than us. So,
that's true.
So there's all things go on this. Today, we are talking about, we're asking 5 questions about making hard decisions.
Ouch. Mm.
Todd, you have a very nervous look on your face. Do you have a hard time making decisions?
It really depends. I don't feel like I did before I was here. And now being part of a startup that we're still trying to figure out what works. So
sure.
It's like,
yeah,
well, you know, if we put all our eggs in one basket,
our livelihood depends on these decisions. And so it's a different kind of hard.
It's a different kind of hard. And it's, there's a different amount of clarity that you can provide. You always want to be clear. I mean, you can be uncertain, but you always want to be clear. You can't be unclear. Good. That's Andy Stanley, by the way.
Nice. Good. Attribution is good. We don't want you to take
exactly
credit
like
for
that.
Stuff.
I'm sure he said it much more eloquently than that.
But it was good, regardless. Yeah. All right, let's grab our first question. And so this one is I have to decide who to put on the hot seat here. I think I'm going to put Jenny on the hot seat. And question number one is...
Todd's pointing.
Well, and because he talked already, what is the hardest decision you've ever had to make as a leader? So we don't, you know, you can leave your personal life out of this, but just leadership decision. Right. What is the hardest decision you've had to make?
I think the hardest decisions always involve staff, you know, and
firing people.
Yeah. Because especially in ministry, oftentimes there's somebody who's just not the best fit for a role. But they're friends, they're family, you know, mm-hmm. Ministry's so relationally connected. And when you have to make a hard decision of, you know, a person, their strengths, their gifts, what the organization needs in that season. And, you know, on the rare occasion where there's not another seat that makes sense. And a lot of our churches, you know, we don't have I've been able to be a part of large staffs, but I've also led church teams that were small. And so sometimes there's just no longer a fit. And I think those are the hardest decisions when it's somebody you love, you care deeply about, and you have to look them in the eye and say, you know what, this is no longer a fit. Especially
if the person
painful.
Has been around for a long time.
Yes.
And the organization may have grown,
yeah, mm-hmm.
but they didn't grow with the organization.
Yes.
And if you don't find that decision hard, you probably want to self-examine.
You don't have a soul.
Yeah. exactly. Firing should not be an easy thing unless somebody has, you know, broken the law or something. That should always be a hard decision.
Yeah.
Todd, what about you? Hardest leadership decision? Leadership decision?
I'm going to first do a little cop out and I'm going to go personal for just a minute.
Okay.
I think... especially if you're already in leadership, the most important leadership decision you are going to make is who you marry.
Uh-huh.
Because it will have a tremendous impact on what you're able to do in your life and ministry. Who you choose as a ministry partner
That's good.
Is massive, because if they're not into it, if they're not passionate about it, if they're not supportive of it, if they don't love Jesus and get it, then don't even think about, you know, getting married to that person if you're called to ministry. Because
you can't do ministry what you can do in ministry is severely limited if you're married to somebody who's not on board with it.
Tremendously limited. And so I think that is the number one most important decision, period, end of story. That I would go along with Jenny and say, you know, some of the most difficult decisions have certainly been around employees and what to do with them when situations arise and you're like, I don't know what to do with this. Mm-hmm. the hardest decisions that we make on a regular basis are really just day-to-day decisions that we put off.
Because the longer you put them off, the harder they get.
The longer you put them off, the harder they get. And you're not leading with clarity. You're not leading with vision. You're not letting your team do what they need to do. And
that's good.
And probably one of the hardest decisions is letting other people decide. And as you grow in leadership,
the decision to hand over responsibility.
Absolutely. Yeah. The higher you go in leadership, the less decisions you should be making. Good.
Yeah.
I think another category of hard decisions, and this, I'd say this is probably one of the hardest I've had to make, is deciding when to leave. So deciding when is the right time to transition from something you're doing that you have invested a lot in, that you find valuable, that you look at and go, I'm doing good work, but there are lots of good reasons to go do something else. And then you've also got the family aspect of it. So when I moved from Chicago to Nashville, I'm thinking, okay, I have to switch my kids' schools. My wife was in school. She had family in the area. So we're looking at the family piece, looking at the professional piece, looking at the ministry piece, all of these things. That's a decision that is incredibly hard because you circle around it over and over and over again and think through every single contingency. And then you start over and do it again.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I might have missed something the first time.
Yeah. That was a big one for me when I left Crosspoint because I loved that and I still love that church. You know, my husband and I were part of planting it. And a couple of years ago when, you know, I started to sense that God might be moving me on, I was incredibly resistant because there was nothing wrong. I was, you know, it was a great team. I loved leading alongside Pete Wilson. For all intents and purposes, I was thriving. I mean, they had its ups and downs as anything does, but I didn't want to leave. And yet there was a sense that God was moving us on. It was time to make a change. And it was one of the probably most difficult decisions I've made personally in leadership because there was no reason that I had to go. Like a lot of times when we make a transition, it's, you know, some other factor might be forcing us to make a decision to move. And so when you have to make a decision like that and it's a.
Well, and a lot of times it's, you know, taking a step from the comfortable to the unknown, because how pretty a picture that someone paints for you of what this new role is, you don't really know what it is until you get there. Especially
if you've made transitions a few times, you know that you're stepping into something that's not as good as what you were told it was going to be.
Yeah.
There's going to be unexpected frustrations, disappointments, something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's,
But you know, what you risk is God's best for your life. And if you know, so many times I'll have people that will say, well, how do you know you were called to do X, Y, or Z? And I'm like, well, there have been times in my life where I'm like, clear, man, yes, God is calling me to do this. But the vast majority of times, no, it's been, I know who God has created me to be. I know how I'm wired.
Yep.
I know enough about myself that I know where I'm going to be able to do the most damage for the kingdom. And so it's like, okay, do I feel a sense of calling? I don't know, but I was made for this.
Right.
I mean, you know, that when I moved from McLean to Lifeway, that was the thing. It was like, we love you. You love us. We don't understand. And I'm like, well, if you knew the people that I'm going to be with, because I knew the guys here.
Yeah.
If you knew the reach and the resources that Lifeway has, and they say, we're going to give you a blank check. Come do leadership for
build
us.
Stuff.
Yeah. Build stuff. Build stuff. Yeah. And it's like, okay. I mean, you know, I've said it a couple of different times, but I do think that the local church is a sleeping giant. And whatever we can do to wake up the people in the church that are actually the church. The church is way more than a community with a gifted pastor. It's a community of gifted people. And if we can engage those people and we can call them out to do what God has created them to do, man, that's what gets me up every day.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And I don't know how we got there from
decisions. That actually transitions pretty well into our second question, because you're talking a lot about the balance of leaving somewhere good to go somewhere potentially better. And so the question is, how does a leader balance potential positive versus potential negative impact when making a decision? Mm-hmm. Leaving somewhere that's good has a potential negative impact. going somewhere that might be great has a potential positive impact. How do you balance the positives and negatives? Mm. And that doesn't just have to do with going. It can also do with, I mean, any sort of significant decision.
Yeah. Well, and I think even balancing the positive and negative, you have to be mindful of that because the negative always is louder, right?
You know? Usually it's clearer. Usually you can write down numbers on negative. It will cost this much. It will whatever. The positive is like, it's all projections. We don't really know.
Yes, totally. So I think even being aware of that is important because I'm by nature a critic. Like I'm always, evaluating everything, finding what's good and what's bad, but I'll mostly find what's bad. And so I have to focus myself on what's good about different situations. And so just, as I'm looking at this question, I just even need to recognize that the negative is always going to be louder. So I've got to have that in mind as I'm looking and balancing out positive and negative, or I'd never move forward. I'd never make a tough decision because I'd always see the potential negative consequences rather than the potential, future.
But it's the flip side of that is that there are people who are
too optimistic.
They lean visionary or too optimistic. And so they lock on to, it could be this. Yeah. And you look at this giant problem right here you're overlooking.
Yep.
And just, you're trying to leapfrog right over this to get to your fictitious tomorrow. And
that's good.
And you can't go there either. So the obstacle can't be the thing, neither can the thing that doesn't exist yet. Yeah. There has to be a balance there.
Well, yeah. I think this sets up my response really well.
Oh, perfect.
Because I would say, it's from the practical perspective, how does a leader balance the potential positive and potential negative when making a decision? Obviously one of the first things that comes to mind is wise counsel. Yeah. And I would say, the key word in that is wise
genius
counsel.
Both of you.
Wise counsel. So you're going to have those people who rain on your parade, have a tendency to maybe point out all the negative things. And you may have someone that will tell you all the positive things. You need wise, balanced counsel.
Yeah.
When you're looking at one of these things, don't make the decision on your own.
Because one day I'll feel this way and I'll make this decision. Yes. The next day I'm going to feel this way.
Well, let me go ahead and ask question number three, because you're already starting to answer it and they go together.
Sorry,
and
I wasn't reading ahead.
No, that's okay. When should leaders make decisions themselves and when should they work with a team or in this case, council to make mm-hmm. them? So you're talking, you just said the phrase, don't make the decision yourself. Is that a blanket statement? Is there ever?
No.
Okay. So there are just unilateral, I'm making the executive decisions. And then there are times to get counsel. So in balancing the positives and negatives, how do you work with other people and when do you do it yourself?
Right.
We've just combined two questions.
One of my favorite young leaders who I think has so much raw potential, it's just insane. Anytime you gave him wise counsel, he would always immediately apply it to his life. You never had to point anything out twice. And this guy was self-confident for sure. Hmm. What I told him, I said, the difference between you being just changing the planet and being a good leader is sometimes I want you to be compelled that you're right.
Yeah.
Sometimes I want you to come back.
Yep.
And I'm your boss, but I want you to be compelled that you're right. This is what you want to do at your campus for your people. You need to be compelled that you're right.
Yeah, I mean, plant a flag on something.
There's going to be a limit, of course, to that. But you need to make you not do whatever it is you want to do.
Or make you believe in what he wants to do. It's one of the two things.
Absolutely.
So, that's the compulsion is I will fight for this to the point where you either go, I see it your way, or you go, enough. We have to do it a different way. But the compulsion pushes it all the way to that place.
So, when should you make decision by yourself? When you are compelled that you're right. When you are absolutely compelled that you're right. Now, if you have a couple people around you that think you're way wrong and they start to throw up flags, you definitely need to put that before the Lord. But there are some things, man, I'm just like, no.
Well, you've got to make decisions with conviction. Like yes. you just like, and so, and I want a team around me that feel that deeply about the decisions and the choices that they're going to make. And likewise, I want to bring that kind of same conviction to the decisions I'm making. And I think, I mean, I think most of the time I would say have wise counsel speaking into, especially major, we're talking about making hard decisions. So those hard decisions, those difficult choices, like you want people around you, but then there are points where it's, you know, the wisdom of counselors is really valuable. And then yet at the end of the day, taking that back to God and really getting, you know, discernment on which direction should I go? I've gotten good, you know, counsel yeah. and feedback, but there are occasions where as a leader, you know, your job is to go first. And so sometimes you're going to have to make a decision that nobody else sees yet.
Right.
And so you're going to have to be bold enough and brave enough to do that. But I would say, don't do that blindly. Don't do that without having heeded some wisdom.
And there's a big difference between getting counsel and making it a vote.
True.
The decision lies with the leader. So you getting yes. counsel is not saying, all right, I'm tallying up what yes. you think versus what the other side thinks. And then we're going to go with the majority. It's right. your decision. You're trying to get input to make the best possible difficult decision.
My children are all, you know, I've got a first grader and two preschoolers.
A first grader who could graduate from high school right now.
This, it's true. He's wicked smart. It's awesome. Ask him a president or tell him a number. Be like 23 and he'll tell you who number 23
is. Who the 23rd president
it's,
is.
Yeah. It's yeah, unbelievable. It's awesome. So much fun. But I tell them all the time, and they don't understand it. And I don't know why I say it, but I'll say, this is not a democracy.
He'll meaning, figure it out. Give him like, give him a say, month.
He's working
he probably,
on it.
He probably already knows, but
he'll be
know,
like, yeah, Dad, it's a Democratic Republic.
There's sometimes where you have to remind people, hey, this is not a democracy.
Right.
Now, I would say in the case of vision and values and stuff like that, don't expect a team or staff to get behind you if you develop that on your own.
True.
If you don't yes. develop that with
yep.
them.
Yep.
Don't expect them to own it.
Yep.
Don't expect them to be passionate about it and don't expect them to execute it. You're probably going to end up with, there's some things that you have to develop with a team.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's going to be Book of Judges and everybody's going to do what's right in their own mind.
Totally. Well, and I would say only make the decisions only you can make, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think the other thing is we can default to thinking we're the only one who can make decisions,
yes.
you know? So, yep. You know, every different scenario or decision that comes up, if there's somebody else who can make that decision with you giving a little coaching, like I think in the leadership seat, deferring as many decisions as you possibly can, empowering your staff to make those decisions, and right. then you stepping up and you making the decisions that only you can make.
Yes.
You've shown that you're just not a dictator that's just dictating everything the organization does. You're really empowering them on the decisions that they can make and giving them latitude to make them and even make yeah. a few mistakes along the way.
And if they trust you, they're going to come to you for input, not to say,
totally.
What should I do? You know, they're not asking you to make the decision for them. They're saying, it's my decision. What do you think?
Yeah.
And then on those occasions when you have to make the decision, yeah, it's not, you're not doing all of it and you're not.
Yeah.
I was going to say disempowering, but that's not the right word. That sounds like disemboweling, which may fit in this instance.
It just depends, yeah. really. I would say for those listening, if that's something that you want to dig into a little bit more, decision rights and stuff like that, double click on a podcast that we did a while back on micromanaging.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
I think it would be really good. It's one of the most listened to.
By the way, speaking of where to do that, we never mentioned this URL, which is my problem as the host. I forget. If you go to lifeway.com/churchleaders, you can find all of our previous episodes. If you want, and we have show notes on almost all of them with quotes and links to any resources we mentioned, things like that. So lifeway.com/churchleaders, you can go find it. You can read the quotes and then you can listen to it there too. If you're not doing the iTunes thing. So don't forget that one. Let's jump into our next question. So this is number four, which is how should leaders communicate with their organization about difficult or momentous decisions? And so either ones that have been made or ones that are upcoming. So just sort of the communication spectrum. Hey, we are facing this decision, or hey, we've recently made this decision as a leadership team, or I as the leader. Communication, go. Mm-hmm.
Again, I would say people will follow you if you're uncertain. They won't follow you if you're unclear. So clarity and communication is the number one thing. Be sure that you have an official plan. a rollout plan and a rollout strategy, and that you have clear, a clear process. It's almost like a workflow. I mean, think of it as a you know, almost project management. Yep. There's a specific flow that you need to do. And I would say, pay attention to the formal and informal communication chains. So you may have the formal communication change, or I'm sorry, the formal communication about the change goes through, you know, hierarchy typically. And then the informal is, hey, this person has been here for 20 years and everybody pays attention to what she says.
Yes.
It's really important to get her buy-in.
Yep.
It's really important to help her, not script her, but to help her understand.
Understand it, because she's speaking on your behalf.
She's going to be speaking on your behalf. People are going to come to her. As soon as they hear it, they're going to ask her what she thinks.
Yep.
And you want to be sure that you have not controlled it.
But you've adequately equipped.
Well, controlled.
Her to understand. Yeah. We're supposed to control freaks around the table. Oops.
It's control if it's damage control. It's influence if it's positivity. Because you're
I like that, Barnabas.
You're giving
them
the opportunity to work on your behalf if it's positive. If you know that person's going to speak negatively, then it's damage control up front. So you're cutting the problem off before it begins.
Well, it's culture understanding. It's back to emotional intelligence. You know, and I think a lot of times in decision making, as a leader, we spend so much energy in the decision making process, but then we can kind of cut ourselves off at the knees if we haven't thoughtfully planned the communication process, you know, afterwards. So you put all this energy into this hard decision, you know, change, whatever the dynamic is, and then if you fail to actually have a really healthy communication plan, factoring in all the variables. So there's all the, like, you know, the typical communication channels, but then understanding culture. And for me, I typically in an organization will look to have somebody around me who I know has a much better pulse on culture. And so in both scenarios at Crosspoint and at Menlo, it's been my assistant who was really well liked, trusted, very relational. I always make sure I have an assistant who balances me well, because I'm kind of the, like, driver, like, get stuff done person. And I need the person assistant wise who is really good and relational, listens to people well. It balances my team. Mm-hmm. But that person typically will be the one who knows what's going on in the culture. They'll hear it. They'll hear the grumbles of, like, well, I don't understand that decision, or I don't know why we're doing that. And so I will always pull that person in. So knowing who that is on your team that has that pulse on culture, because in the leadership seat, hopefully you have some of it, but you never have all of it.
No.
Just by the nature of the seat you're in.
Yeah, you're layers removed from.
You got to know what the word is on the street.
Yeah, and we can fool ourselves into thinking we know it, and we don't. We just don't know. Yeah. Exactly how people feel about the decisions that we make. And so we've got to have people around us who feel safe enough to tell us, and you pull them in to help speak into, okay, what's the best way to share this? What's the best way to communicate this? Who do I need to talk to one-on-one? Because they're going to be influencers in the culture, and, you know, them being well-equipped is going to help other people embrace it.
Let's get a little nitty gritty on this question in terms of, like, communicating details. So you talked about rollout plan and things like that.
One pager, Barnabas.
Yes. Thank you. an example would be, Lifeway is in the midst of, and has been for months, a decision on selling our current property in downtown Nashville and buying a new piece of property and building a new building, or selling pieces of the property and refurbishing it. And it's been through multiple iterations because of the negotiations with the potential purchasers. And Tom Rayner has communicated clearly throughout, without giving us all the details of everything in advance. Mm-hmm. That is the question. Like, that's the balance I'm trying to get at. How do you know what to tell the average employee about when and what's happening and how much money is this going to influence, you know, how is this going to influence us financially, those kinds of things. And how much do you just get up there and say, hey, there's a big decision coming up. We're looking at doing this thing. Significant. Trust us.
Mm-hmm. A couple thoughts come to mind. I mean, I think in communication, I'm always thinking, who needs to know, what do they need to know, and when do they need to know it? Mm-hmm. you know, one of the organizations I worked in, we would always say everybody can know everything, but not always at the same time. Because sometimes if you give people information too early, it might produce anxiety. It may just be you've now put a burden on their shoulders because it's a problem that's not solved. And now they're just having to live with the uncertainty and the frustration or the concern or the whatever it is.
Right.
So I think that's a, you know, it's hard to give a hard and fast rule to that. But I think you just need to be incredibly discerning as a leader of what gives people the a level of information that they feel that they're being included.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not just. You're not just lobbing some problem that just creates anxiety and detracts them from focusing on their day-to-day.
Their job, because it's going to be stressful for them. It may cause them to select out and go somewhere else.
Yep.
I know that there are people that are sitting around the campfire going, you know what? I don't know if I have this in me. I don't know if I can go through all this transition or, you know, officing here for this long and there for this long and. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Blah, blah, blah.
You know, consolidation, all those different things.
Totally. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I may steal something. So you.
No. I was just going to give an example. One of the teams at Menlo, we were getting them new office space. And so we were trying to communicate really well to the team about the options and the ideas, but it became fatigue because property in the Bay Area is outrageous. So it's quite difficult to find spaces. And so it kept getting delayed. Well, it ended up being a burden on them because they, you know, it was like it kept. So then they weren't trusting us every time we'd give them new information. They didn't trust it.
I
think we gave too much too early because we didn't have enough solidified in that scenario. Well,
when you give too much too early or and something gets stretched out or when you don't give enough information.
Yeah.
People are going to fill in the blanks with their own narrative.
Totally.
So that's the other, that's the flip side of the coin that I just wanted to bring out because I think you hit really well the other side. But to say, okay, if we do not give, if there's a vacuum.
Totally.
People will fill it with their own narrative. Yeah. I guarantee you.
All of a sudden, there will be 100 stories in the culture of what's happening. Yeah,
it'll be so fun. Sometimes it's fun to just listen to.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, oh, really? Yeah. We bought that piece of property? I didn't know that. Or we're doing.
That's right.
There's going to be what in the new facility?
Wait, shag carpet walls? Shag, what did you say?
Yeah, what?
All right. So one more case scenario, because I think this might be the one that is often the stickiest. So if you're communicating to employees, there's some clarity there. It can be difficult, but there's some clarity there. If you're communicating to church members, so take the scenario where a church has to let a staff member go or due to budget reasons, they've cut staff or something, you know, and it is something that will hit an emotional sore spot with the congregation. Churches don't often do a very good job of communicating what happened, and they don't communicate it in the right time, and they don't give the right amount of details. It's usually word gets out through the rumor mill, or the church communicates and said, and they sort of cover it up with flowery language. You know, these people are moving on to other ministry opportunities. Like, no, you fired them. Those are two very different things.
Those are very different things.
But so. What about that context where you're communicating a difficult decision that you made in church leadership to people who they don't work for the church? You communicated it one way with the staff, but now we're talking about congregants who feel an emotional connection to those people who are no longer there, for example.
Oh, this is the sticky part of church because if Target fires somebody as a shopper or consumer, I'm like, okay. No,
I can still find my laundry detergent and it doesn't affect me.
Yeah, doesn't it? But, you know, and that's the difference, right? In marketplace and ministry is that in ministry, it's highly relational. It's very woven together. There's strong community. We work to create all of that because we want that to be what a healthy church is. But then when somebody moves on, it's painful. And so, and I think different, depending on the size of your church will I think influence how far and wide this is shared, or whether it's shared from the stage, you know, or the platform or not. I think different contexts set up different scenarios on that. For me, I always start with, okay, what's the closest circle of influence that leader had or that staff person had? If this person is needing to move on for whatever the circumstances are,
right.
What's their closest circle that they're connected to, probably key volunteers beyond staff, and starting there, and then kind of ripple effect out of like, what are the groups that need to hear and how do they need to hear it? And sometimes that might mean from the platform on Sunday morning. In the context that I've led in, the churches are too large that only a fraction of the congregation would have known that individual. Right. So it wasn't always appropriate because it created more questions than it.
And that's, that's another layer of it. I mean, if you're a church of 500 people, you probably should communicate from the stage. If you have five campuses, you shouldn't.
Yeah. You shouldn't unless that person is
a senior pastor or something.
Well, or in front, if they have a prominent position that is central to all the campuses.
Right.
Or if they're on the main stage, the main campus or whatever, then you have to.
Depends on their visibility.
If they have a public on stage position, then I don't think you have a choice.
So a lot of times, in the handful of cases where we've had to do this, I will often explain to whatever size group I'm with, out of respect for the individual, we're not sharing all the details of, this separation. If you're welcome to talk to me one-on-one, I encourage you to reach out to that individual if you'd like. We often encouraging smaller group conversations because you can have healthier you can have actual conversation in smaller groups. When you're just making an announcement,
that's where trust happens a little bit better in those conversations too. I threw a sticky one at you guys there. So thank you for answering that.
Barnabas.
Well, and I think everybody has to be aware of your context,
yes,
your culture. This is where discernment, emotional intelligence, like all those things as a leader come into play, and you've got to, and listening well, you know, you've got to listen well to the culture, how it's responding. They've got to know you care. But then they've got to also know that you're clear on where you're going and why you're going there.
And I would say the larger your context, the more complicated the issue is, that's when you get outside counsel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's hit our fifth question. I don't think this one is terribly complicated, but it's something we all face. And that is, how should leaders respond when a difficult decision goes bad? So either publicly or privately. So how do we respond ourselves? And then how do we respond within the organization when a difficult decision goes bad?
Todd's just sitting back. He's just like,
I don't even know what this is about.
I was like 2 feet from the mic, leaning back.
What's this going bad business? I thought it was
an easy one. I thought it was a softball that you were throwing to Jenny.
Nice. I was throwing it out there.
I think you just have to acknowledge it, as a leader, name it. Yep. Own it. Name reality. Like all of those things.
Even when that's scary. Because I think in the corporate world, if you own a decision that goes bad, specifically in the corporate world, you might cost yourself your job.
Yeah.
But everybody knows it was your decision anyway. So just go ahead and man up and own it.
Yeah. Well, and I would say too, if you're ignoring it or pretending it isn't there, you just lose credibility and trust. Like if you're just blowing by it and acting like, it didn't even happen, or you're just, cruising
brush
forward.
Brush your shoulder off.
Yeah. People are going to be like, they see that. And then I think the other thing is be willing to admit whatever part of it is your fault. And if, as a leader, there's something for you to own in it. Even if I don't know, care what the circumstances were or how it played out, because you're in the leadership seat, there's something for you to own. Well,
you put the people in position who made the decision. So if it's not your decision and somebody you hired or under you makes the decision that goes sideways, it still rolls uphill. This is the one case where the you-know-what rolls uphill instead of down.
Yeah.
And it's when a decision goes bad for somebody under you.
Yeah.
And so, you have to take responsibility
for that.
That's
the way it should be. Unfortunately, that's not the way it always is.
Well, usually there's a lot of scapegoats involved.
But as a leader, you really should. I mean, think of what it does for someone who works for you. If you've ever had a boss who took more of the criticism and gave away more of the credit, you know that
Embears might be good in some cultures. Endears is good in all cultures.
Not likely.
You
will endear yourself tremendously to your team, to that person. Absolutely. They will have your back and then some moving forward, but also to their other teammates, their peers will also notice that and say, okay, he took on more of that than he needed to.
Yes.
That's a leader. That's how to do this. Again, I would just reiterate, tell the truth, own it. And I would say you do want to provide framework. You mm-hmm. want to help frame why we did this and yep. how this happened.
Right.
But don't spin it. So there's yeah. a difference yes. between framing it
yes.
to help people better understand it.
And making excuses.
And spinning.
Right.
Yes.
And I think the other way that spinning it often works is trying to spin it for future, where you say, we're going to learn a lot from this or something like that, where you go, that may be true, but that doesn't actually solve our problem right now.
Well,
right.
that may yeah. be one of 5 points. It's a valid point. It certainly is.
Depending on how it's framed.
Your main point.
Right. And if you frame it well, yeah. it's a humble statement of, we will look to learn from this. We will figure out what we can learn from this, as opposed to some sort of like glorious, that fictitious tomorrow of we're going to be better because of this. That doesn't, when things are going sideways, that people don't yeah. want to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's back to the naming reality. They're just like, do you see, do you know, are you paying attention? Are That's you right. aware?
Do you know how bad this is?
Yeah. 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 So I think, yeah, the owning it, the naming reality, and then I think providing clarity for what's next, mm-hmm. you know, so when a decision goes bad and, you know, usually there's some pieces to pick up and try yeah. to figure out what to do next.
How to respond.
Yep. So the team does want to hear you have a way forward. Like,
yes.
where do we go from here?
They want you to have
here?
Solutions. You shouldn't just dump this on your congregation or dump right. this on your
yeah.
team or boss or whoever you're bringing this to.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that wraps this up. We have we've bared our souls and talked through difficult decisions and whatnot. And I hope we've said something that's useful to somebody who's in the middle of communicating something. Or making yeah. hard decisions. So thanks, Jenny, for being on with us again.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Todd, you're always here, but thank you anyway.
Yes.
All right. And that was this episode of the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Jump on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. We will be indebted to you. And we'll likely never pay that debt back, but indebted anyway. So thanks for listening and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.